Hello, welcome to the Foxworthy Podcast. I'm Brian Fox, your host. I'm here with my co-host, Taylor Gaines. Taylor,
hello.
What's up? We're going to talk about a couple of interesting shows today that kind of share a similar title. So we're going to call our episode American Crime versus American Crime Story. We're going to be talking about American Crime on ABC, which is a network show, and then we're going to be talking about the new drama on FX, The People versus O.J. Simpson, subtitled American Crime Story.
Isn't it American Crime Story subtitled People versus O.J. Simpson?
I don't know if it matters. I've heard it both ways.
It's just funny you're saying similar titles and they're actually just the same title. One just has more right. words.
I thought this would be a fun episode to do to kind of talk about both of these shows and sort of what they're doing, what they're trying to accomplish. I think we're going to talk about American Crime first, which is the ABC drama created by John Ridley. He writes several of the episodes. I think he directed the first episode of the second season as well. He is an Academy Award winner for the screenplay for 12 Years a Slave. This is his show. He kind of runs it, and obviously there's a writer's room, but he definitely has a strong creative hand. I think in the first season he had a lot to do, and this season he's also pretty heavily involved in the week-to-week of the show. But this is a drama. Taylor, do you want to help me sort of describe, just generally spoiler-free, kind of what the premise of this season is? Because it has a different premise than what they did in the first season, which was 11 episodes. Each year is kind of a new mini-series with a new premise, a new plot.
I've seen all 5 episodes that have aired, and we're going to be pretty spoiler-free about it, but the simplest way to put it is it's a story about how a rich, entitled school with a really good basketball team sort of gets rattled by a rape accusation, and just all of the fallout that ensues from that. And it's a very complicated story, so it almost doesn't do it justice to sum it up that way. But in essence, that is, like, what it is.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think that's a good summation. The actors in this show, pretty good performances all around. Timothy Hutton's in it, Felicity Huffman, an actress named Lily Taylor, who you might know. She was in The Conjuring. That's probably, like, the most famous, well-known thing that she's been in. But and Regina King, who just won... She won an Emmy, right? For season one?
For American Crime, yes.
Yeah.
Sorry, I was thinking of her on The Leftovers, because she's...
Oh, she's also on that.
She's really great. Well, she shows up season two of The Leftovers.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, they're all great in this show, but they're playing different... They were all... Those several key players were in the first season, and they're back in the second season, but the story's completely different. It takes place in a different place, so they're playing completely different characters. It's very similar to what Ryan Murphy kind of did with American Horror Story, where he kind of has a troupe of actors that return each year. A lot of them come back and play completely different roles. So they're doing that, and that's kind of an interesting thing. But did you have something you wanted to say?
Well, I was going to say, this is a show that sort of checks off all of the boxes for, like, high school cliches and, like, rich school cliches and, like, sports are king and you don't want to mess with the sports team. Like, there's a point, I don't think this is too spoilery, where the school superintendent or whatever comes to the basketball coach and says, you need to talk to your players about this. Like, they're being accused of something going down at this party. And he's just like, one of my players would never do this or whatever. Like, there's a lot of, like, that kind of stuff, but at the same time, this show sort of talks about subjects that other shows really don't, and there's sort of this tension in the way that that happens between kind of ham-handedness, for lack of a better word, and, like, elegance, I guess.
Right.
That's sort of what we wanted to discuss, is, like, this kind of tension that the show creates, like, story-wise, between those two kind of, not extremes, but, like, those two ideas.
Well, and I think it's worth mentioning, going back just for a second to what we were mentioning about the performances and how the performances are really strong, I think some of that ham-handedness and some of the cliches that you mentioned are actually elevated by how good the performances are. Like that scene that you just mentioned where he's like, one of my players would never do that. It's delivered in such a way that you're like, I've heard this before, but I'm willing to forgive it, because there's just something to the performances that is so genuine, and it feels less of, you know, the stereotypes and kind of the same old kind of cliche things we've seen before when you're dealing with stories about, like, scandals in a high school or, you know,
right.
teenagers and stuff like that.
We've talked a lot before about how specificity and detail is what, like, makes a story stand out, and a lot of times in this show, what's happening is that specificity and detail is coming from the performances themselves.
Right.
and less from the writing. Like, it's not to say the writing is bad, because the writing is certainly, like, at least good most of the time. Like, it's...
Occasionally above average, I would say. Yeah. But mostly, like, good, yeah.
But there's a lot that the performances add to the show that really makes it feel more specific than perhaps, like, it would on the page. Because, yeah, like, the scene we're talking about is a good example. There's a lot of, like even the main story of the person who is allegedly raped,
right,
like, is sort of, like, a story you probably have heard before, too, where it's, like, the cool kids are having a party, and, like, this lame person wants to, like, fit in, so they start drinking, and then they get too drunk, and then all of a sudden, like, something right. bad happens.
And there's kind of this interesting... I find it interesting because I feel like it's very real, and I feel like it may seem cliche, and it may seem like a lot of TV shows are trying to tackle this with, like, the procedural shows and stuff. Lots of shows incorporating, like, teenagers especially misusing technology and misusing their phones and not understanding that, like, people can film you, people can text around an embarrassing photo of you if you do something dumb, and, like, learning how to kind of manage your life while also, you know, being social and being happy, but also... you know, being careful that what you're doing, you know, things you say online, stay online. Pictures that get posted online, stay online. That kind of thing. And I feel like I've seen shows try to tackle it, but I feel like this may be the most effective way that I've seen, where it feels like something that could absolutely happen.
Yeah, and it's really complicated. This, like, the way they tell the story is kind of... there's a lot of different stories going on, and a lot of different ideas, which we'll talk about a little later. But, like, just the way that they sort of combine everything really makes it so there are a lot of questions running through your head.
Right.
And it makes it really interesting, because they're sort of... the subversion of expectation is
right.
of an essential tool for, like, storytelling in general. And the thing about a lot of the cliches and, like, stuff that you expect this story to be... is that it often doesn't wind up being that.
Right.
Like, they'll twist it in some way that feels like something that could happen and doesn't feel cheap. And it makes you think of a lot of different things, because it's just not something you've experienced in storytelling before or in real life, probably.
Right. The show is incredibly multi-layered, and I think that that's something that surprised me the most. I mean, I went into this with really no expectations. I've heard... you know, the critical reception was pretty, I guess, mixed, kind of skewed positive in relation to season one. There was a lot of people who kind of thought it was good and the acting was excellent, but it was kind of a little too self-serious and very ham-handed in what it was trying to do. And I think that based on what I've researched, it sounds like people are kind of more impressed by what they're doing this season. And I think it's interesting, you know, they have all these... we're going to talk about this a little further later on in the pod, kind of in relation to the O.J. Simpson show. But I think it's just fascinating how they're dealing with class, they're dealing with race, they're dealing with all of these issues, but they're not dealing with it in, we're just going to throw all these issues in a pot and just kind of, like, throw them at you. They have them... I read a review that sort of... I'm just going to borrow this line from the review, because it's really smart, that sort of the conflicts and the issues and the things that they're bringing up sort of rise organically from the characters and the situations. Nothing really feels grafted on or shoehorned in. There was a line in a review on Vulture, I think it was a recap of one of the first couple episodes of the second season. And that stuck with me, because I think that that is kind of an accurate way to describe it. There are moments where you're like, oh, this is so cliche, I've seen this. There are moments where you're like, oh, I could do without this, maybe, but the actors elevate the material, and I think the direction also elevates the material, which I think is the next thing we were going to talk about.
That's what I
think this
show
is really well directed,
yeah,
especially for a network show.
I was going to say, we usually talk a lot about just writing and its effect on storytelling, but I think we'd be remiss. Is this the right way to use the word remiss? I think we'd be remiss if we did not mention the direction, because... it really is, when we talked about it being, the show being elegant at times, like, the acting contributes a lot to that, and the direction does as well. There's a one-take shot in the fifth episode that aired last night. Well, we're recording this on a Thursday, it just aired last night. that is like really, really striking. I'm not going to spoil it, but basically there's a performance and a lot of the main players are like sort of at this performance watching it, and like the performance itself, you talk about the ham-handedness, is sort of like really obviously actually about what the show is about.
Right.
I'll be vague, but if you watch it, you'll know what I mean. But the way that the camera sort of like ties all of these things together, all the characters that are experiencing it and like sort of what they're probably thinking and like the way that they react to this performance, and like it's a ballet performance, I'd say that much. It's just like really an effective way to tell the story that just can't be done in any way other than visually, and it's really interesting. What do you make of, there's a lot of shots in this show where main characters are talking to sort of faceless like officials or doctors, where like they'll just maybe show the interviewer's hands briefly, or like maybe their mouth. Like, what do you make of all this kind of I don't know, facelessness?
I don't know. It's so interesting. Like, I feel like those scenes are just so striking because they kind of give, I don't know. I wonder if maybe the point of that and sort of the what they were going for with that style is just sort of giving all the attention to the person that is being shown, and just kind of saying, well, the perspective of this other person does not matter. All you need to worry about, and the only thing we're going to hone in on right now, is the person that's face you can actually see. And I think that that has been really effective. It's interesting. I don't know if it's interesting every single time that they've done it, but for the most part, it's really cool. I like it. I think it's interesting.
You know who's got directing style?
Who?
Ryan Murphy. I think we'll come back to American Crime in a minute. I think we should talk about OJ.
Yeah, let's do it.
Ryan Murphy, who best known, might not know who he is. But
I mean,
like,
Ryan Murphy is kind of a television guy at this point.
Yeah.
He created and worked on Nip Tuck for FX. He is currently running, he has a bunch of shows currently running, American Horror Story, which this American Crime Story is sort of a weird, they're calling it a spinoff, even though they have really no relation to each other other than being American Horror Story and American Crime Story.
They're just both anthology series.
Correct. Scream Queens on Fox, which I believe was renewed, also an anthology series. He runs that,
yeah.
And he was the showrunner of Glee, which ran for 6 years. What else? I feel like, is that
it? Is Eat, Pray, Love his thing?
Eat, Pray, Love, the Julia Roberts movie based on that book was, yeah, he, I think he maybe wrote the screenplay, but he definitely directed it.
Well, the reason I thought of him while we were talking about directing is, you talk about ham-handedness and sort of melodramaticness. Like, there's a lot of shots in the first episode of American Crime Story, The People versus O.J. Simpson.
Which, I think, just so we don't confuse anyone, I think we're going to, from this point on, we'll stop saying American Crime Story, just so you can stop getting confused, and we'll just say The People versus O.J. Simpson or The O.J. Show.
Yeah, so...
But yes.
There's a lot of shots in this first episode, pretty much in every scene, where it ends with a dramatic, like, pan or, like, zoom into
there's
a character.
There's lots of swooshing and, like, zooming in on people's faces to, like... You know, you come into a room and then you kind of, the camera kind of swoops in on somebody's face.
And oddly enough, and this is going to tie into what we're talking about with this show, but like, it didn't really annoy me that much.
No, I was fine with it.
Like,
this episode moved like lightning. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah,
it was an hour, when it aired with commercials, it was an hour and 20 minutes. And I felt like it was like 40 minutes maybe.
And this is what,
at most.
This is what we want to talk about with The People versus OJ, is like, this is a story that everyone is pretty much familiar with in some way.
Absolutely.
Like,
even though I don't remember that much about the case, I can tell you at least two or three things that I do remember.
My memory, or at least, I was probably one when this happened. And my understanding of it now is just like, this dude probably murdered his ex-wife, and he got away with it. And, like, it's one of the biggest, like, travesties, and like he was a big football star, like all that stuff. And that's what is interesting about this show is like, obviously there's a lot of people older than us who might be watching this who really remember this. Like, I want to talk about why this show works when it's something we know about and something that
right.
we know what the ending is already.
What makes it so entertaining?
Especially this, like, this day and age when everyone is so obsessed with endings. And, like,
mm-hmm.
The ending has to work for me to like something, and, like, everybody knows how this is going to end.
Right.
But, like, it's really, really gripping still.
Yeah, and I think, again, we can maybe reference casting, because I think the casting choices, for the most part here, are genius. I think that everyone is... There's been some... A lot of people are very divided on the Travolta performance as Robert Shapiro. I think it's kind of fascinating, and I didn't really have much of a problem with it at all. But, yeah, I think that they just expertly cast people that can embody these people who can remind you, like, oh, these were, like, larger-than-life characters, but also sort of maintaining some sort of humanity and kind of making them people again. I think, you know, they've only aired one episode, but the critics, I think, have been given the whole season. So a lot of critics have seen... Maybe they've only got the first six. I'm not entirely sure on that. But the television writers and television critics have seen a lot more of it than we have, you know, the public. And I think that a lot of people are really impressed by what they've done with kind of rehabilitating the image of Marcia Clark, prosecuting attorney. Because, you know, when this trial was happening, people would make fun of her appearance. People would, you know, there was a lot of sexism going on. They thought she was cold. They would call her, you know, names. And I think that in a few weeks, we're going to get an episode where it sort of dives into more of her as a person, and you sort of get, you know, a sense of who she was. And it sort of does a lot to sort of rehabilitate, like, wow, people were so awful to this woman for, you know, kind of like insane reasons. That's just one example of, you know, how they kind of humanize people on this show.
Yeah. And in a different element, I guess. We've talked before on this show about setting and, like, sense of place being important
right.
to shows working, and, like, sort of the contextualization of 1994 that this show does in, like, the first, like, 20 seconds is, like, really helpful, especially for me, someone who wasn't alive, like, I was right. alive, I guess. Someone who didn't really know what the atmosphere was like in L.A. back then, like, they sort of throw in all this stuff about the L.A. riots and how racial politics between police and citizens were working at the time. And, like, it's just, like, very helpful to, like, sort of put everything on this different kind of playing field than just what you have in your head is just, like, oh, it's just this guy who got away with murder. So, like,
right.
it sort of adds a lot of different complex ideas to it, which is sort of similar to ABC's American Crime. In that
right.
kind of way, but
which I think we're going to talk about sort of how these two shows, the threads that kind of relate these two shows and what these two shows are trying to do as television. I think we're going to get to that in a minute, but was there something else we wanted to talk about just in reference to this first episode specifically of People vs. OJ?
Yeah, like, I wanted to say the phrase stranger than fiction is, like, true a lot of times, especially in Florida, you know, where we mm-hmm. live. But that's the crazy thing about this, is there's so much stuff just in this first episode that happens, and my initial reaction was just, that happened? Like, I knew that this happened, but I didn't know that that happened. It's almost less a question of how do you tell this story in an entertaining way when everyone knows what happens, and more of a question of, like, how do you screw this story up? Because it's amazing. Like, it's just an insane story. And it just keeps getting...
Yeah, I mean, we have 9 more hours of this to go. And I feel like every episode is going to have those little tidbits where you're like, wait, what? And then you're going to Google it. And you're going to be like, did this actually happen? And
yeah.
a lot of it, I think they really are trying. They've definitely taken some artistic liberties. Even in the first episode, there's been some fact-checking and stuff. Some stuff that they kind of... just kind of make happen in a certain way for their dramatic narrative. But I think for the most part, it's trying as hard as it can be to be accurate. It's based on a book, right? Did we mention this already? It's based on a book called The Run of His Life, The People vs. O.J. Simpson. I think the author is Jeffrey Toobin. And I think it's drawn heavily from that and also, you know, tons of other research that the showrunners did. The show is created by two guys. What were their names? Larry something? I have it here. Scott Alexander and Larry Karaszewski. They, I believe, worked on several films, but their thing is to do true crime. So I think they did The People versus Larry Flint, and they've worked on some other things. Most of their work is adapting true crime for film and television. Actually, this might be their first television show. But this, they're working kind of with Ryan Murphy. I think Ryan Murphy is sort of show running it, but they're credited as the creators, and they wrote the first episode, and then Ryan Murphy directed the first episode that we just watched on. I guess the show airs Tuesday nights at 10.
Right. I think, generally speaking, if you're interested in crime shows, mm-hmm. then both of the shows that we talked about are, like, really probably worth checking out. On a really basic level, like, ABC's American Crime is pretty depressing.
Yeah.
So, like,
it's definitely there's no levity there.
It moves along, but, like, you're not going to be entertained by it per right. se. So it's sort of a similar experience to watching 12 Years a Slave, actually, which
right. It sort of has an, like, importance, and it has,
yeah,
things
it's like
that
it
it's
seems
doing.
Important, but it's, like, really,
and it's
not enjoyable in a lot of ways.
Right, and it certainly is at a certain level of quality where you're, like, you can really, like, sit back and really appreciate what the parts of it that do really work. But it definitely is not, like, a fun time.
Well, OJ is somehow pretty entertaining.
Well, this is something I think we should kind of, and then we can kind of talk about this real quick and then kind of blend this into the very last thing we wanted to touch on in relation to both of these shows. It's just, how crazy is it that this was sort of the start of, like, our obsession with celebrity, our media culture where, you know, everything was news relating to this trial, no matter how crazy or how small, and it was just like, it was on the nation's attention. Right.
They wouldn't be what they are today, right, without this?
I should mention this, because I thought this was really interesting, that Robert Kardashian, the father of the Kardashian sisters, is in this show, played by David Schwimmer, and is, like, not at all depicted as, like, who I would have thought. Like, apparently David Schwimmer talked to Kris Jenner on the phone for a few hours and was like, please tell me as much as you can about him, just who he was as a person. Apparently he was, like, a family man, and he was, like, kind of religious and just, like, tried really hard to be virtuous. And, like, it seems like he didn't really have, like, a motive to be involved in this trial other than, like, OJ was his best friend and he just really wanted to be there for him. And, like, he was in big trouble and he wanted to help him. And I just think that that's fascinating.
The juice, man.
Because
I love the juice.
Yes, but going back to, I mean, the Kardashians obviously is, like, a huge, like, frustrating part of, for me, of, like, our pop culture. And, like, the media right now is, like, everyone wants to know what they're up to, and they're followed around all the time. And obviously she's married to Kanye, which is, like, its whole other thing. But it's just, it's sort of, like, fascinating. Like, I feel like this is the perfect show for right now because, A, true crime stories are having kind of a moment right now. Obviously, last year and this year, we have Serial, the popular radio, you know, podcast. We have Making a Murderer, which we did a whole episode on, just dropped, you know, last month.
The Jinx.
And, you know, there's just, like, a fascination with true crime stories right now. I don't think that they could have planned for this show to be released at a more opportune moment, but it's so interesting. Like, I can't even imagine. I mean, we did have the Casey Anthony case, like, here in Florida several years back, which was kind of, like, had its sort of media frenzy surrounding, like, every little detail. And there was a lot of weird, bizarre stuff that came out of it, but it definitely wasn't like this. I mean, this was a huge thing for, like, a year and a half. I guess the trial was about 18 months, and then he was finally acquitted.
I think we kind of wanted to close out with, like, I think we've touched on sort of our thoughts about the shows and whether what you might like about them or what you might
right. And I'll just say, before we move to this final segment, that I think both of these shows are very good. I think I might be entertained and more excited to watch more of The People versus O.J. Simpson, but I don't want to write off American Crime because I definitely think that it is a quality show. And what I've seen of it has been really impressive. Like, you don't have to watch season one because it's a completely new story. You can start fresh. There's been 5 episodes. I highly recommend it just for the acting, just for the direction, just to see that not all network shows are garbage. Like, this is a worthy show, and I think that it does have some flaws, but it's worth the time. And I think if you're someone who wants to watch a lot of different types of things and you're kind of interested in what networks do versus what cable shows do, this is, like, a really fascinating study in that. So I think the last thing we were going to talk about is just sort of how both of these shows, the thread that both of these shows kind of have is that they're, the way that they present their themes and the way that they kind of present these contemporary issues, like, the lens through which you watch them, it just kind of can start a conversation.
Yeah, like,
and it's just, it's a really interesting thing that TV can do.
These two shows aren't just, like, good, they seem like they're important. Like, mm-hmm. these are shows that can start conversations about, like, race and class and, like, I guess police citizen relations,
police like, brutality. Absolutely.
I'm sort of combining the two shows as I list these things off, but like sexuality, like
right,
gaps between generations, like there's just a lot of like ideas that are sort of portrayed or like thought about in like unique ways. American Crime more so than OJ, because OJ is sort of like a snapshot of a certain time, but it's at least like in that case sort of reframing a lot of the issues in a way you might not have thought about.
And there's a lot of it that sort of relates to today, like I kind of mentioned, with just the media culture and the way that we idolize celebrities and are fascinated with what celebrities do and what happens when celebrities get in trouble. And like, is there more that we should be paying attention to? Like, I feel like, you know, did OJ really get off because he was famous? Like, I feel like that kind of stuff happens all the time, you know, DUIs and, you know, lots of people get in trouble and it's like, they're not treated like people. They're like, oh, well, you're so-and-so famous person, so you're kind of excused in this manner. And I think that that's sort of fascinating. And yeah, it's just, I admire both of these shows so much for their ambition. I don't know that they are always going to be completely successful in achieving what it seems like they want to achieve. But just the fact that we can sit and talk about both of these shows and say, like, there's a lot going on in both of these shows, like so many different layers, so many different themes, so many different issues that you can dissect. And I think we could spend literally hours talking about these shows. And I think that that's kind of an interesting way to sort of look at both of them together simultaneously, even though they are really, really different. Obviously, one is adapted from, you know, real life situation and the other is completely fictional, but touching on things that do very much happen today in, you know, in real life.
Yeah, it's just worth making art that you feel like is about stuff that people need to talk about or people need to acknowledge, I guess, because it could lead to interesting conversation. Right. Like, we'll see how this develops, but, like, I don't know if a story necessarily has to be something that actually happened for people to start talking about things. Because, like, obviously Making a Murderer, we talked about this a lot, but set a lot of people off and, like, made them want things to change in certain ways. And, like, maybe it won't be that extreme, but I think these two shows at least could start similar conversations.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that they're both really interesting, and I think it's interesting that they're both kind of on the air right now, and they have that sort of weird, almost the same title kind of thing, which is, like, I'm sure not intentional, but just really amusing that there's a show. I'm pretty sure when the first season of American Crime aired last year that I thought it was the OJ show. Because, like, I knew that they were doing a quote-unquote spinoff of American Horror Story called American Crime Story. And I was like, oh, American Crime. Oh, no, that's a totally different thing. So, anyway, I think that's going to wrap up our conversation. Was there anything else you wanted to add? Or
just some plugs, I guess?
Yeah, so Taylor has a column that went up on Tuesday. He wrote about Man in the High Castle this week. That's up on GainesvilleScene.com. If you go to GainesvilleScene.com, you look for Hidden in Plain View. Is it just under the entertainment section?
Or? Yeah.
So check that out.
I wrote about Man in the High Castle and my thoughts on how it could really be great if it just, like...
was, like, just a little better?
Changes a little, a few things, I guess. Yeah, and as always, you can follow us on Twitter.
Yep.
And you should follow @FoxworthyPod.
@FoxworthyPod, that's the official
listen to the podcast.
Twitter account of the podcast. We are also on iTunes. If you go to iTunes and search The Foxworthy Podcast, Foxworthy obviously spelled FAUXWORTHY. Just search it, find us, you can stream us there, you can download us there. Please, please, please rate and review us. We'd love to hear some feedback and kind of know, you know, if people are listening and what they like about the show, what they don't like about the show.
I'm just @GainesTaylor on Twitter.
Yeah, @GainesTaylor for Taylor. I am @FoxBJ_88. I think that's going to do it for us here today at the Foxworthy Podcast. We'll be back next week. There's tons of stuff coming up. I don't know what we're going to be talking about next week, but I know in a few weeks, you know, Better Call Saul comes back on AMC. We have,
Vinyl?
I don't know. Oh, Vinyl. When
Vinyl?
Is that here?
Better Call Saul, John Oliver.
There's all kinds of stuff. So
yeah.
Look at your calendars.
We could also, I think, a week from today is the release of Kanye's new album. We could just put on headphones and we'll just listen to it because we don't want to get in trouble for playing music. So we can just listen to it and just whatever we say while we're listening to it, that could just be the podcast.
Sure. You'll probably be like, this is great. And I'll be like, I hate this guy so much. All right. Well, thank you very much for listening. We'll see you next week.